or whom I thought I was. My mom. She was here? In person? At my father's house. Karina? The way she said my name made it sound like she was the one who should be surprised to see me. I pushed my socked feet into the concrete porch to stop the swing from moving. My phone slid off the edge and hit the porch face down. I couldn't move to pick it up. My mom hadn't changed physically since I last saw her. Her already long hair was a few inches longer, now passing her waist. She was dressed in a long, colorful patchwork tunic and leggings with large wildflowers printed on them. The tunic had long, patterned sleeves that flared out at the ends. She looked like she'd walked out of a photo from Woodstock, a bohemian flower child of a woman who was floating toward me. I wasn't sure her sandaled feet were even touching the ground. What are you? Why are... My heart pounded so hard that it felt like I was shaking the ground beneath us. She'd finally come back to find me. I couldn't believe it, even though she was right there. I didn't know why she'd chosen now, but I was so elated to see her that tears involuntarily poured out of my eyes like they were water sprinklers. I jumped to my feet, and confusion washed over me as her face shifted into a frown. Was something wrong with her? Did she come back to tell me that she was sick? Oh God, I thought, both of my parents are sick? My mind couldn't keep up with the theories flying around. Is your dad home? Her voice carried through the light wind. Her eyes went to the window behind me, the yellow glow of the light through the window casting a shadow onto her face. Yeah, and Estelle. I realized my mom probably had no idea that my dad was remarried. Estelle is... I know who she is. My mom's lips turned into a smile, but the shape of it made me take a step back, my knees knocking into the front edge of the wooden swing. There was something off about the way she was behaving. It didn't seem like she was drunk or anything, just off. Or maybe I had created a version of her that wasn't reality. But when I imagined our reunion, she was always running toward me with open arms and teary eyes, telling me how sorry she was while she stroked my hair and hugged me tight. Instead, she stood at the bottom of the porch like she was a vampire who hadn't been invited in. I was at a loss for words and waited for her to say or do something. The door creaked open behind me, and Estelle stepped onto the porch. I felt like the porch was spinning. It had to be a dream. Karina, who are you? Michelle, what are you doing here? Estelle's tone was one I had never heard from her. I'm here to see Dennis, to finish our conversation from the other day, my mom replied, equally as hostile. The other day? I interrupted. You were here the other day. None of this made any sense. Karina, could you please give us a moment? Estelle asked me. I jerked my neck, snapping at her. Give you a moment? She's my mother and I haven't seen her in... I trailed off, digesting the disinterested look on my mother's face. Where is he? My mom asked, not acknowledging my outrage and confusion. Was this the same woman who'd told me tales and hummed me to sleep? Maybe she was on drugs? Or suffered from memory loss? Nothing made any damn sense. He's inside, but he will not be talking to you. Estelle was firm, to which my mother laughed, covering her mouth. Is that his choice or yours? Dennis! My mom shouted for my father. He stepped onto the porch with lightning speed, rushing down the stairs, his finger pointing directly in my mother's face. What are you doing at my house, yelling at my wife? He was only inches away from her. Given the past, my instinct was to protect my fragile mother, but in the moment, she didn't seem fragile at all. I stood still, my world becoming more and more confusing by the second. We never finished chatting the other day. "You said you would call me, but you didn't," my mother said to him. A look of disbelief flashed across his face.
"So you thought the appropriate response would be to show up at my home again? I was very clear last time, and I'll say it again. I don't have anything for you."
"Dennis, if we can just talk alone." My mother was practically begging. What on earth could she possibly want from him? She hated him, or at least I thought she did. Was it money, a place to stay?
"I don't have anything to say to you that I haven't already said. You should explain yourself to your daughter, who looks as if she's seen a ghost. She should be your priority right now."
Disgust echoed in his voice. She looked at me, her expression unreadable. She seemed to be looking for some sort of escape, but I wouldn't allow that. If she tried to leave, I would chase her, like I hadn't been able to the first time. "Mom?"
"We will be inside,"
my dad said, before my mom could respond. Estelle crossed her arms at her chest. "I don't think we should," she began, but was interrupted by my mom.
"She's my daughter. Give us privacy," my mom snapped.
Clearly, she had a major issue with my father's new wife, even though my mom was the one who'd left him in the first place. I didn't even know when she and Estelle had met, but it was clear they had. Estelle's worried expression stayed in my head as she went inside the house, leaving me on the porch with my mother. My heart was racing. I had so much to say to her. I had so many questions. This is probably a shock to you, seeing me like this. I had no idea you would be here, or that you were even on speaking terms with your father. And I didn't realize you were so close with Estelle.
I'm not close with her.
Anger bloomed inside of my chest as I realized that her focus was on Estelle and me having a relationship with my dad. Not that she missed me or was happy to see me. She hadn't even hugged me yet.
"That's what you have to say to me after all this time."
I crossed my arms in front of my chest. She shook her head and took a step closer. I inched back without intending to, but I was shifting into fight or flight mode, completely on edge. "I have so much to say to you, Care. I have been so busy, on a journey to find myself and who I am, without being your father's wife or a mother." She smiled, as if what she was saying was the best news on earth, and not devastating for me to hear. I was too stunned to speak. After I left, I spent a lot of time alone with my thoughts. And you know what I realized? I was never meant to be a mother. Being a military wife, and officers at that, was not for me. I spent my entire life living for you guys and not for myself. I was a shell of a woman, miserable, and had no sense of self. But now, Care, I know exactly who I am, and it's wonderful. She was beaming, a bigger smile than I could ever recall seeing on her face.
"Wonderful," I choked out.
She nodded as the air left my lungs. Was I supposed to be proud of her and her fucking self-discovery, which made her feel like what she'd done was right? Was it right? It seemed like it had been the best for her, but what about me and Austin? "Yes. I hope you have this feeling someday, Care, of just complete peace." She spun around at the bottom of the porch, her tunic rising up and dancing around her. "Mom," I began. "Please, call me Michelle," she corrected me. If heartbreak had a sound, the entire neighborhood would have heard mine. There were no words for the pain searing through me. Shock, torment, rejection, envy of her carelessness. It was too much. I could taste the vinegar like bile in the back of my throat. I swallowed it down, squared my shoulders, and tried my damnedest not to collapse in front of her.
You're totally fine with the fact that you abandoned your family without so much as a phone call or even a letter, only to come back here now and have the audacity to tell me how great your life is now that I'm not in it? She scoffed. Literally fucking scoffed at me, like I was the one in the wrong here. You sound like your father. She half laughed. Maybe she was on drugs? Or had she really convinced herself that her perspective was okay? She seemed genuinely happy and at peace. Maybe her perspective was just that. Hers. Did that make it okay? I wasn't sure anymore. I've been traveling around the South for a while, deciding where to settle, and ironically, I started dating a soldier. Who would have thought? He's younger than me, embarrassingly so, but he's a good guy. And he's stationed here for now. But got orders for Hawaii. She tried to cover her smile with her hands, looking like a smitten schoolgirl. I get to live in Hawaii, Care. You know I've always loved Hawaii. You've never so much as mentioned Hawaii in my life, but good for you. I pushed my hands through my hair, tugging at the roots in an attempt to ground myself. You're being a little judgmental. If I was a violent person, I would have slapped her across the face right then and there. I am judging you. Not because you're dating someone or moving to Hawaii. I'm judging you because you basically told me that you've decided being a mother wasn't for you. Like it wouldn't hurt or impact me to hear that. Like I'm supposed to just smile and be happy for you. As if I hadn't spent the last 6 years wondering where you were, worrying about you, thinking you missed me. You haven't asked me a single question like if I'm okay or what I've been doing since you left. You haven't even given me a hug. My emotions took over, and I couldn't control my voice as it cracked, but I refused to cry even though it felt nearly impossible not to. I was just filling you in on my life. I thought you would be happy for me. I haven't gotten the chance to ask you anything yet, she said, manipulation covering her words. You've had years. I told you I was finding my way. You really are like your father, always focusing on the negative, always demanding. Stop saying that, I screamed. You don't even know me. You chose not to, and you show up here for what? What do you need from Dad anyway? Money? Are you on drugs? My mother lunged toward me, but I dodged her before she could touch me. Drugs? Don't you dare accuse me of being on drugs because you can't accept that I'm happy. All I've ever hoped for is that you're happy. But this entire time I had this idea in my head that you were pining for me, missing me every day, hoping that I was taken care of, but in reality, you've completely erased me from your life, memory, and future. I thought you were here to, I don't know, apologize, or at least feel a little bit bad for all the pain you've caused. I was also in pain, she had the audacity to say. I was a child. But you're not anymore. You should be able to understand what I went through and why I had to leave and stay gone. I did what was best for all of us. The words clicked, and I realized she was right. Her leaving was probably the best thing that had happened to me and my brother, even if it had hurt like hell and given us both different forms of trauma. I couldn't imagine how much worse it would have gotten, and she had already left us in a house that was burning. As I was about to remind her of that, an orange hatchback car pulled up in front of the house. I couldn't make out the face, but there was a man behind the wheel. He called her name and she waved, smiling like we had been simply talking about the weather. You're right. You're not meant to be a mother, and should never have been one, I told her. Karina, that's harsh. I don't want to leave on this note, but I have to go. Your brother has my number if you want to call me, but I assume you won't. As pathetic as it was, I was still hoping for her to hug me. One last embrace before disappearing from my life again. But there was no embrace. No affection, no comfort. Just a narcissistic woman I had longed for when I shouldn't have. As she got into the car, she waved at me, and I tried to memorize her face,
one last time before I broke down, crumbling onto the hard surface of the porch, crying not for me, but for the little girl who'd created her own fantasy of a mother she never had. I didn't hear the door open, but before I knew it, Estelle was next to me, her arms wrapping around my shoulders as she hugged my shaking body. Flashes of my childhood ran through my mind. Both versions of my mother were there as we danced around the living room, made beaded bracelets, braided my hair, then as she sat lifeless on the couch for days, screamed at my dad for working too much, told me stories of escaping and never coming back. "Karina, I'm so sorry," Estelle cried, stroking my hair. I untucked my chin and looked at her. Her eyes were bloodshot, her face blotchy and full of anguish. She felt more for me than my mother did, and that revelation made me even more emotional. I hugged her back, and the porch swing rocked in the wind, bumping into my arm and scratching it. I pushed it away, suddenly disgusted by it, but it swung back and almost hit me again. "The swing, fuck! I never want to sit on this again," I told Estelle. She looked at it, and back to me. "Let's take it down." "Really? Don't you like it?" "I like you more. And I've always hated that fucking thing, if I'm being honest." Estelle being the person to comfort me was not what I'd expected, but I welcomed it. I stood up, brushing my work pants off. "How exactly do we take it down?" I wanted to smash the thing into a million pieces, but logically, I didn't know what to do unless she handed me a hammer. We looked at one another and shared a laugh. Both of us were still wet from crying, but we stood there laughing as my father joined us. He was beyond confused as he took in the sight of two half-mad women on his porch, laughing and crying at the same time. "Honey, can you take this dreadful swing down for us?"
"Are you sure?"
He looked at me, knowing how much I had always loved that thing. I nodded, never wanting to see it again. A part of me healed as my dad got his toolbox and began to take the swing down. Estelle kept rubbing her hand along my back, a movement that I think would normally have made me uncomfortable, but it didn't. It felt nice, calming. I couldn't wrap my head around what had just happened or process the years of abandonment I had felt, only to have that feeling multiply by 1,000 within the last 10 minutes. My conversation with my mother had lasted less than 5 minutes. She couldn't even be bothered to stay longer than that. The sound of the wooden swing falling onto the porch was music to my ears. I felt so stupid for putting so much emotional value on an object, somehow tying my mother's memory to the stupid thing. Now that it was on the ground, it looked so worn and useless. It felt like a metaphor for my life, or what I thought my life was. Chapter 31. Karina. The day after the confrontation with my mother, I walked into the hotel lobby to find Elodie already waiting for me. I was so damn tired, and my entire face was swollen from not sleeping and being hysterical for hours. When I saw Elodie, I instantly felt a little better. She was dressed in a beige floor-length linen dress with a thick brown cardigan on top and white sneakers. Her hair was pulled back, and she was wearing tiny, star-shaped stud earrings. She grabbed me into a hug and squeezed me, as if we hadn't seen each other in months, not days. "Are you all right?" she asked, pulling back to look at me, then hugging me again. "I'm fine. Are you? I should be asking you that first." She nodded and took my hands, leading me to sit on a couch toward the back of the lobby. I had never been to this hotel before, even though it was one of only a handful of decent ones around Post. Elodie's family was staying here for now, and they'd gotten her a room next to theirs for as long as she needed.
I hadn't met them yet, but the timing couldn't be more awful. I would have loved to meet them under different circumstances, as in literally any other circumstance. It's nice staying here. Not that your house isn't my favorite, but I feel more independent, even with my parents right next door. Does that make sense? She smiled, tucking a piece of her hair back into her ponytail. It makes perfect sense. How are your parents handling everything? Actually, not so bad. They don't understand how no one has caught him, and they're worried he'll come find me, but they haven't forced me on an Air France flight back home. Pas encore, not yet. That's good. I offered a small smile. Do you think they will want you to come back with them? If I were them, I would likely drag her onto the plane for her own safety. She was only a few weeks from delivering the baby, and her environment was incredibly important, now more than ever. Some parents actually gave a shit what happened to their children. What a thought. I'm not leaving. No. I have many reasons, Elodie responded, straightening her back and looking into my eyes. Mon amour, Austin, my job, and you. I don't want to leave you. She added, any of you. I don't know what the future holds for me, but I know it's not back home, she continued. It sounds crazy. Austin almost lost his life because of me, but I can't imagine mine without him now. The right thing to do would be pack up and run away, but I'm done running. We all deserve a happy ending, and I want to at least try for one. So much has been taken from all of us, it's not fair. Fair left the conversation a long time ago, I told her, speaking to myself as well. I'm sorry about your mom, Karina. The reason I didn't tell you wasn't to hurt you. I hoped she would change her mind or realize that she was wrong. It doesn't make sense. She's not a good person. There it was. I knew my mom would be brought up, but as much as I thought I was ready for it, I wasn't. It had been less than 24 hours since my encounter with her, and it still hurt so damn bad. One minute I was fine, reminding myself that nothing had changed. She'd left me once and hadn't cared. Why would I expect her to now? But the next, I found myself wondering what I had done so wrong at 16 that would make her hate me enough to abandon me twice. You remind me so much of your father. Her words played in my head again and again. Both of my parents had unfairly punished me over their hate for one another. I had spent my entire life trying to not be like my father, only to have the one person who knew him best throw that in my face. What made me romanticize the memories of her and who she was? Was it loneliness or my own way of rationalizing her choice to leave us? I didn't want to consider the idea that I wasn't enough for her to want to be a part of our family. She'd made it clear that she had no remorse and felt like she'd done the right thing. I desperately wanted to find compassion for her instead of anger, but after yesterday, all I felt was disgust and shame. Some people weren't meant to be parents. Some people shouldn't have kids. I'm not upset with you for not telling me. It's not your responsibility, and it's no one's fault but hers. And mine. I wish we knew the reason. My BV isn't here yet, and I can't imagine doing that. She's not a mother, Elodie hissed. Not a mother at all. I'm sort of learning that there's not always a reason for everything. People are who they are, and we can't love them out of it. Why didn't my mom want to have a relationship with me? What about me wasn't as good as my brother? I'll never know. But at least now, I know that I don't need to waste any more time guessing what kind of person she is or making excuses for her. Elodie rubbed my hair, and I leaned against her, not able to put my head on her lap anymore because of how big the baby had gotten. Je promets, I promise, your life is better without having to guess about her, she told me, doing her best to comfort me. You're too good for all of us. Too understanding, but that's why I love you. I'm so sorry that it ended up this way, Karina. I really am. Thank you, Elodie. Can we change the subject? I asked her, not sure I could handle talking about my mom anymore. I was grateful to have at least one person I could depend on, but if I kept talking about my mom, my brain would explode. I had gone round and round in my own head since it happened, and was near my breaking point. I stared at the painted ceiling. Sure, Elodie smiled. I took my parents to Waffle House and they loved it, she grinned. My mom was scared at first, but they went back twice already. This made us both laugh. Nothing like a good Waffle House meal to welcome them to the States. Are they staying long? I asked. Not sure. I think they're scared to leave because Philip is out there somewhere. But according to Tony, he's been put into a treatment facility. Even though we are technically married, they won't tell me anything, so I don't know if it's true. Are you afraid? I asked, my voice barely above the sound of the lobby music. A little bit. But there is not anything I can do. So I will just live my life and hope things turn out well for me. For all of us. I wish I could think like that. Every time I hear a noise when I'm home alone, I think it's him looking for you. I tried to work yesterday and couldn't catch my breath every time the bell on the door went off. I always thought I was equipped to handle trauma, but I'm not. I gave myself too much credit without the experience, and it shows. You can't measure how strong you are based on how you handle trauma. That's not fair. Or reasonable. I would tell you the same thing, but unfortunately that's how my brain works. This week has been such a tale of how well I can handle things, and it's made me realize how weak I am, even though I've spent my entire life thinking I'm not. Elodie looked at me, sighing, but not trying to talk me out of my idea. She knew it was no use. Instead, she changed the subject again, and we both pretended like life hadn't drastically changed for both of us. Chapter 32. Karina. Cale was waiting for me in the lobby at work when I got there. I had been ignoring his calls, so I couldn't say I was surprised. I wasn't sure what to say to him now that he had lied to me again. Hiding things from me was lying any way I looked at it, and I was so fucking tired of everyone around me acting like I couldn't handle the truth. Even if I couldn't, it wasn't their choice to make for me. Cale had known my mom was back, had known she had no interest in seeing me, had known about my father's health failing, and he kept it all from me. If this was the first time he had done something like that, I may have forgiven him, but not again. No matter how much I loved him, I was too tired to continue on this hamster wheel chasing something that I would never be able to be sure was real. Not only could I not trust him, he had done it all under the guise of knowing what was best for me. And if he'd truly known what was best for me, he would have understood that I'd needed some kind of warning and time to process. I was so damn tired of being surprised, and having one thing after another pop up and turn my already barely manageable life upside down. How can I help you? I asked him, plugging in the vacuum. We were opening in less than 5 minutes, and I still needed to vacuum and wipe down the counters in the lobby. I was working even harder to show Molly that I deserved the promotion she was offering. There were no clients scheduled for the first 30 minutes, so I had time to clean up a bit.
You haven't taken any of my calls. I was worried last night, but knew you were with your dad and Estelle and your mom, he said as I turned the vacuum on.
It was much easier to act like I couldn't care less what he had to say. I would deal with my emotions later, but being cold was the only way to keep myself somewhat sane. The rejection from my mom for the second time, and the fact that everyone knew except me, it was a pattern in my life that I was not willing to keep. I've been trying to decide what to say, I admitted. putting all my willpower into keeping a neutral face and tone. I ran the vacuum over the small space, and of course, he waited until I was done to speak.
Karina, I'm sorry. I know you're probably tired of hearing me say that, but I am truly sorry.
I didn't look at him as I wrapped the cord around the holder. You're right. I am tired of hearing you say that. He stepped toward me, his feet directly in line with the spot on the floor I was staring at to keep myself from looking at him.
I thought I was doing the right thing. I didn't want you to get hurt.
I made a dramatic noise, anger growing in my veins. Yeah? And how did that work out? How does it always work out when you hide shit from me? He dropped his head.
Not well.
You keep lying to me, since I met you, and I keep taking it, every single time. I'm tired of expecting the best from you, only to be let down. You're supposed to be the one person I can trust in this world, yet you have lied to me more than anyone, my dad included.
I know it sounds like an excuse, but every choice I made was to protect you. I always had your best interest at heart, Karina. I would do anything for you. You have to know that. I was just waiting for the right time.
You, or anyone else for that matter, don't get to decide what's right for me, Gale. It always ends up hurting more in the end anyway. Didn't you learn that the first time? Or the second? How many times has it been now? My father, my mother, is there anything that you've actually been honest about since we met?
That I love you.
My heart pounded, my pulse screaming behind my ears. You have a funny way of showing your love for me. You always tell me how strong and capable I am, but you keep taking the power of choice from me. That's not love. That's manipulation. He stepped closer to me, desperation on his gorgeous, traitorous face.
I'm sorry. It's in my nature to take on everything, and with you, it's nearly impossible to just allow things to hurt you. I can't bear it. I will try if you forgive me, but please try to understand my perspective and how difficult it is to untrain my brain of my way of thinking.
I let out a dramatic scoff. Your perspective? You can't expect me to put your perspective before my own, Kale. I get that you're brainwashed by the army to just take tragedy and silence your own trauma, to not have an emotional tie, analyze it, and come up with a solution, but out here in the real world, it's not like that. I didn't mean to hurt him with my words, but I couldn't sugarcoat my feelings anymore. The fact that I knew he was a good person made this harder, and it was easier if I tried to be like him, emotionless and analytical. I had been rejected by my mother, and that absolutely killed me, neglected by my dying father, and lied to by the man I loved. Again. When I listed it out, it was nearly unbearable, and there was no solution. I couldn't force my mother to want anything to do with me. I couldn't wish my father's body back to health, and I couldn't pray for Kale to stop being Kale. Knowing that his intention was to protect me made it worse, because it made me feel helpless, spineless, and codependent. The three worst things to me. I held my independence to a high, high stature, and losing it, even to love, was not something I was willing to do.
I can't live with you handling all of this on your own. Let me be here for you.
Kale interrupted my internal battle. And I can't live depending on anyone else being here for me. I need to deal with all of this on my own. There is way too much going on in my life to have to worry about my heart and not my head. It's easier to be alone. I want to be alone. I have to be alone, Kale.
I'll give up Atlanta for you, Karina. I'll sell the house and stay here. I've already contacted a realtor. I'll give up whatever I need to. I'll do whatever you need me to. Please,
Kale. I swallowed the pain as I spoke. That's the thing. I don't want you to give up anything. I can't live with myself if I hold you back either. We shouldn't have to sacrifice our entire lives and identities to be together. No one should.
Love is sacrifice, Karina.
I shook my head, refusing to allow my fate or Kale's to be like everyone's around us. No. Not to me.
The front door opened, and the bell dinged. I was surprised to see Tony standing there. She looked tired but smiled at us, clearly not able to read the room. Kale stood as still as a statue.
I wasn't sure he was even breathing as Tony spoke. What awful timing.
I tried to call but got voicemail. Any chance you have time for a 30-minute walk-in? My back is killing me from yard work and cleaning up the house for the move, she explained, her hands at her chest in a prayer gesture.
Move? I repeated.
We got orders for Texas. Didn't Martin or Elodie tell you?
I glared at Kale.
No, Martin didn't tell me.
Add it to the fucking list.
When do you go? I asked her. In about 2.5 weeks, right before Fisher ships off.
I guess all of us are leaving, she said, a hint of sadness in her voice.
Wow.
I wouldn't say I was Tony's biggest fan by any means, but I was a little sad that everyone around us seemed to be getting shipped somewhere else. One day soon, it would be just me here. The thought was chilling, but I had made my mind up.
I've got time. Can you just write your name on the sign-in sheet while I put this away?
I gestured to the vacuum and looked at Kale.
I have to work now, so you should go, I told him, low enough that Tony wouldn't hear me.
The last thing I needed was to be the topic of gossip at her last few FRG meetings.
He looked between Tony and me, clearly deciding whether to go or not.
But in the end, he gave up, throwing his arms in the air in defeat and frustration.
I knew the conversation wasn't over, but at least it would be stalled so I could gain some strength before we continued.
Are you two okay?
He seemed a little tense, Tony told me as we walked back to my therapy room.
Well, he's always tense, but it felt like even more than usual. I almost laughed at her instinct to pick up on anyone and everyone's business, but kept my mouth shut and just told her that we were fine. During her treatment, she did not stop talking, not even for a second. She told me how stressed she was, how she didn't know a soul in Texas and that all her friends were here. She was worried about fitting in with a new group of wives in Tharp's new platoon. That was particularly ironic, given the fact that she had been so hard on Elodie at first. She also told me that she had heard about my dad being the one responsible for catching Phillips, and how grateful she was that he was off the street and no longer a threat to any of us. She told me that Lawson would be taking Kale's place in the platoon now that his discharge was final. She talked and talked and talked, but I found it soothing since I didn't have to think or speak about anything going on in my life. It was a nice distraction, provided by an unlikely person. Her session went quickly, as most half hours do. She paid and tipped me. I didn't know whether the tip or the random hug she gave me surprised me more. After she left, my day was fully booked, and I stayed late to clean the old poster glue off the wall in the lobby. I had already had new signage printed, and even though Molly had told me not to remodel, I knew once she saw it, she would be happy I had. It was nearly 10 at night when I finally ran out of stuff to do at the spa. I couldn't think of another reason to keep me from going home, so I took a deep breath, locked the door, and walked home as slowly as I possibly could. Bradley was sitting on his couch with his blinds and curtains wide open. He was watching some action movie that I didn't know the name of, but I recognized Tom Cruise flying around the screen on a motorcycle, which did not help narrow down the possibilities, since there were at least 10 of those films. Kale's truck was parked in front of my house. No surprise to me. I braced myself again, repeating all the reasons I had to be livid with him, to finally distance myself from him. It was easier when he wasn't in front of me, and I knew that. I wished I could go back in time to that first time he came into my work to meet Elodie and just tell him she wasn't around instead of taking him as a client. If I would have turned him away, none of this would have happened, and I could have gone on with my already miserable life without adding having my heart shattered on top of it. I'd thought I'd known what heartbreak was, but looking back on my life, I had never been in real love until Kale.
The first time he broke my trust was painful. But having opened up to him again, only to be betrayed again, was something else. Something I had never felt before and never wanted to feel again. I had to protect myself above all. Even if I didn't mean it, I wished to myself that I would have this same revelation someday when I met someone else. I couldn't stomach the idea of even speaking to another man, but there would have to be a time in my future when I wouldn't be in so much pain, wouldn't there? But was being alone so bad? I'd done it before. I could do it again. I took one last deep breath and opened the front door. Kale was standing in the center of my living room, his hands behind his back. He was wearing the same outfit, matching navy sweatpants and sweatshirt, as earlier, likely meaning that he had spent the entire day in my house, waiting for me. I wanted to slap myself when the thought made me feel mushy and cared for. How quickly my mind took his side pissed me off. "You didn't have to wait here all day," I told him, hanging my keys up on the holder as I slid my shoes off.
"I wanted to."
"What do you want to say, Kale? You're sorry? I've heard it before, and I really don't want to hear it again. I don't want to argue with you, and I think both of us could use some space." The reserve was clear in my voice, and his eyes told me that he could feel it too.
"I don't want space. Not from you."
"Then what is it you want exactly?" He reached for one of my hands and caught me off guard. I didn't have time to pull away.
"I want to be by your side until your hair is silver. Until our backs hurt and our joints ache. I want to stay next to you as we make something of our names, struggling, then succeeding, and until our memories fade. That's what I want. And I know you do too. I don't understand why you're fighting against yourself so hard."
Using every single tiny ounce of energy I had, I blocked his words from entering my chest. Once they settled in there, I would be a goner. I would forgive him and wrap my arms around him and lose my sense of self in him again, and I couldn't allow that to happen. Everything from my mother's hatred for me to my brother's aloofness and my father's coldness reminded me that I could only depend on myself. Maybe Kale was used to having a platoon, an incredible mother, and a group of friends by his side, but I wasn't. I had never known what it felt like to know that if I fell, someone would be there to catch me, or, at minimum, help me up.
"There's nothing left here for you, Karina. Your father might not be around long, your mother left again, your brother is leaving in a few weeks. Come with me and let's start over, please."
"I have memories here, Kale. I have a life here. I have a job and my house and Elodie."
"Elodie is going to move to wherever your brother gets stationed,"
he harshly reminded me. I knew that, but there was a small chance he would be stationed here. Estelle will be here, and eventually she will be alone.
"And? You can barely stand her."
He was on to my excuses, but I kept them straight. "We've been getting along," I defended myself by a thread. "For better or worse, she's my family." I had grown closer to Estelle in the last 2 weeks than I ever imagined possible. She wasn't my only reason for wanting to stay here, but she honestly was one of them. At the bottom of the list, sure, but still on it. I wasn't even sure what the hell else was on my list, but I was so damn afraid of feeling trapped, giving up the only things that make me, me, like my house, my job, all for a man who continued to hide things. Very fucking important things from me. And an uncertain life. "I can't pack up and follow you to Atlanta. And a few hours ago, you said you were ready to give up that dream."
"And the offer still stands. But what the hell can you do here that you can't do there?"
"A lot? Nothing? I don't know."
"Can you please think of yourself for once? Every choice you make is based on someone else's feelings or well-being, and never your own. It's always about your brother, Elodie, your father, even the damn neighbor.
Everyone except you and your happiness.
He raised his voice, clearly exasperated. I took a step toward him. My living room felt like it was shrinking. That's exactly what I'm doing, Kale. Thinking of myself. I told you from the moment I met you that I was never going to be a woman who follows a man to another city, abandoning her life and her goals for his. I can't do it.
And what exactly are your goals?
His voice turned dark, defensive. Don't you dare act like I don't have any goals. Just because my dreams are smaller and less lucrative than yours doesn't make them irrelevant. I want a quiet life, Kale. One where I don't have to worry whether I can believe the person I'm sharing it with. I want to be alone. That's all I want. He scoffed. I knew his emotions were getting the best of him, and it wasn't like him to be ruled by his anger more than logic, but that made two of us.
A quiet life. Like being in constant danger and constant hustle. Always chasing something that you don't even know you truly want? Is that the kind of life you want? Falling apart? Like your house, for example.
He pointed to the crack in my ceiling that had been growing as the weeks passed. I threw my hands in the air. How fucking dare he? If he wanted to be harsh, I could be fucking harsh. My sadness was drowned by my anger. And what? You're going to keep me safe, Kale? Before I met you, I was never in any danger. I had never had my trust betrayed in the worst way, and I had never, ever questioned my own sanity while being gaslit by a liar who claimed to hide shit from me to protect me. I used air quotes for the word protect to emphasize my point. He stared at me, eyes full of fire. Go ahead. What's your next excuse? If you were serious about having a future with me from the beginning, you would have consulted with me about Atlanta in the first place, instead of buying a place there and hiding it. Now you think because you waited until the last minute that I'm gonna jump when you say jump. And don't talk about my house like that. I work my ass off to have this house, and you know what it means to me. And my father is slowly decaying? So what? I should just leave before he dies and pretend he doesn't exist, like you do yours? I knew I had gone too far, but so had he. We were both taking our anger out on one another, and neither of us seemed to be able to stop. This was for the best anyway. He should hate me and leave me too. If he longed for me after we split, he would be even more miserable. And even if it didn't seem like it at the moment, I didn't want that for him. He looked at me like I was a stranger he had never met, never touched, never claimed to love.
Wow. My father. You're bringing up my fucking father right now.
I'd been shocked into silence by my own words. I waited for him to say something else as both of us paced around my living room, but he didn't. He grabbed his keychain from the table and slammed the front door on his way out. I was still catching my breath as his truck roared to life and he drove off. An hour later, my temper had calmed. And I already missed him. I didn't feel the closure or the ultimate ending that I'd expected to feel. I felt like complete shit for bringing up his father to purposely hurt him. I stared at my ceiling fan and felt my body sink lower and lower into my mattress, digging my fingernails into my palms until the tears stopped coming. I texted him an apology but never heard back. I had finally managed to push away the only man in my life who had ever loved me. The real me. I felt accomplished and defeated at the same time. A devastating and shameful mosaic of my parents. Chapter 33. Karina. When I arrived at the Mendozas, I was stuffed full of nerves. How would things go? It felt so ridiculous to celebrate Halloween with everything that had happened just a couple of weeks ago. I had practically gone into hiding the last few weeks. Only working, sleeping, working, sleeping. I missed the feeling of being surrounded by this group. The first time I had ever found my people.
In reality, they were Kale's people, but I was grateful they'd still invited me. The yard was decorated with fake skulls and headstones and cotton spider webs. I briefly thought of my mom, but fuck her. She didn't get to represent Halloween anymore. She was probably having the time of her life. Childless, no responsibilities, living her life with her new boyfriend, pretending I didn't exist. So I should try my best to do the same. My Uber driver wished me a good night as I adjusted my dress and glanced at my reflection in the window one more time before I climbed out of the car. My face was painted red with black circles around my eyes and thin gray lines across my face from my forehead to my chin. I was a demon, but not a cute one, an angry one. The face paint had definitely looked better in my head, and Pinterest hadn't been as much help as I'd hoped. But there I was, red face and all, walking up their sidewalk. The music wasn't as loud as I thought it would be. Drake played through the windows, and I tried my best to stand up straight as I knocked on the door. I could have rung the bell, but that kind of attention seemed overstimulating to say the least.
"Who's knocking? Come the hell in!"
Mendoza's voice sounded through the door. I turned the knob, wondering if they actually wanted me there, or if I was making a fool of myself by showing up. But it was too late. I was already in the living room. I spotted Gloria first, dressed as a witch, the sexiest one I had ever seen. The slit on her black dress went all the way up her thigh to show her exposed hip. Her mesh stockings left little to the imagination, and she was wearing at least 5-inch heels. Black and silver eyeliner feathered out like wings, traced around her oval eyes. "Karina, baby!" she cooed, rushing toward me with a clear cup full of red liquid. The interior of the house was decorated too. Red, orange, and black balloons touched the ceiling, and there were carved pumpkins everywhere. Some of them were colorful, and some plain. "Wow, you look awesome," I told her. The tension I thought would exist between us was nowhere to be found as she wrapped her arms around me. "Thank you. I was supposed to be Morticia, but the kids fought me too much to match, and with everything going on, I said fuck it, and morphed into a sexy witch instead." She rolled her eyes. "You look scary as hell, by the way." She laughed, her high ponytail whipping around us. "I think I went a little too far," I admitted, a little embarrassed as I looked around the room to see that every woman there was dressed in some version of sexy. She touched the fabric of my black floor-length gown and shook her head. "You look great. Plus, if I see one more fucking sexy nurse, I'm gonna gouge my eyeballs out."
"You made it! Happy Halloween, almost Thanksgiving!"
Mendoza rolled near me in his wheelchair. I would never get used to the guilt I felt knowing he would likely be confined to that chair for the rest of his life, but there was nothing I could do to change that. Confined wasn't the right word, and I had no way of knowing how Mendoza felt, but I knew how privileged I was even to have the thought. I would make sure I found the right way to discuss this, so I was as educated as I could be and not hurt anyone unintentionally with my words. He looked lively, from the flush in his cheeks to his wide smile. He was wearing a white t-shirt with big green eyeballs on it. It took me a second to realize what his costume was. A brown fabric square was draped over his chair. White teeth were glued to the front. A plastic hook was attached to the back.
"I'm Mater," he said in a fake southern accent. "From Cars, you know."
Oh my God. I didn't know how to react. I wanted to laugh, but felt horrible doing so. It was so creative, and the more I looked at it, I could tell that Gloria had spent a lot of time making it. I was sure the kids loved it.
"What? It's fucking perfect."
He honked the makeshift horn on his costume, and I covered my mouth. "It really is," I agreed, letting myself laugh with him. "I made it myself. It ruined our family costume, but this is pretty good, right?" Gloria asked, hooking her arm around her husband. She kissed his cheek, and he stuck his tongue out to lick her lips as she pulled away. She playfully swatted at him, and he grabbed her wrist, bringing it to his mouth, gently biting her skin. I looked away, my cheeks warm. Despite how lonely I was and would continue to be, I didn't feel even a ping of jealousy around them. Over time, I would come to terms with the fact that I wasn't as lovable as I desperately wanted to be. What a monumental realization to have at such a young age. I knew if I said it aloud, whoever was listening would roll their eyes, tell me I had my whole life ahead of me, and promise that someday I would find my true love. What if that wasn't what I wanted? Was the taste of being loved addictive? Sure, but the pain that came with it didn't feel worth it to me anymore. And I couldn't imagine spending my entire life trying to prove to myself and someone else that I was capable of being loved and hoping that they didn't betray me. Not every story is a fairy tale. Not every person has their person. Speaking of pain, there he was. Kale was sitting on the edge of the couch, staring straight ahead. He wasn't in a costume, which didn't surprise me in the least. Dressed in a beige Henley, light wash jeans, and his usual stark white sneakers, he hadn't seemed to notice me arrive. Not that he should, but of course I wished he would have. Together or not, we were supposed to be soulmates. His body was supposed to know when I was around. His skin was supposed to crackle, missing my touch. And his heart was supposed to ache, knowing that he would never touch me again. All that being said, he stared at the wall like he couldn't have cared less who came and went, even me. It was childish and narcissistic to care or expect anything from him, but I couldn't help it. Even in death, I would wish for him to notice me. It had been a little over 2 weeks since I saw him last. Halloween had come and gone too, but since Mendoza was still recovering, we'd all agreed to wait and celebrate the holiday together. No one had been expecting Kale and me to break up, again, but neither of us would ever cause a scene, not under these circumstances. I couldn't stop staring at him, waiting for him to look up at me. What did I want him to do when he looked at me? I didn't have a clue, but I needed him to. Momentarily, I forgot that I was painted red and couldn't find anyone else in the room dressed in a scary costume. I felt like Lindsay Lohan's character in Mean Girls when she shows up at the costume party and everyone is dressed as Playboy bunnies and sexy versions of everything under the sun. Kale took a drink of his beer and finally lifted his eyes. Confusion flashed across his face as he took me in. Then a bit of humor lifted the corner of his mouth. He nodded to me like we were old pals, not lovers. And I couldn't decide if that was what I wanted or not. I'd been the one to initiate the breakup, and I knew I'd done the right thing. But it hadn't been long enough for me to be capable of pretending I was over it. I would love him for the rest of my life. That was evident. Our book was nearly closed, and as a romance lover, I hated third act breakups. But unfortunately for me, I was living one. I nodded back, lifting my drink cup to him. He did the same with his beer bottle and went back to staring ahead. Even though that was what I'd asked for, it felt fucking awful. My brother's voice interrupted my pity party as he and Elodie came through the front door and into the living room. Elodie was dressed as a mouse, wearing a light blue onesie and big floppy mouse ears. Her face was painted, the tip of her nose pink, and white whiskers splayed across her cheeks. She looked freaking adorable, all belly and costume. My brother was dressed as a chef, and it clicked. They were dressed as Remy and Alfredo from Ratatouille. Elodie rushed to me to hug and double kiss me. What a cute idea! And what a hard launch as a couple costumes and all. I smiled at her. It felt good to see her smiling. We thought we may as well. Everyone on this old post has heard about us anyway. She winced, but seemed to be handling it pretty well, considering. Austin hugged me, lifting me off my feet. I swatted at his arms, embarrassed and feeling Kale's eyes on me again.
You look fucked up, my brother laughed. In a scary way.
He bent down to assess my face paint, smiling from ear to ear. Oh, fuck off. It's a Halloween party, not Disneyland, I teased him back. Something about his energy had changed. I had no idea what it was, but something was different. More mature? Calmer? He and Elodie had been staying in the free side of Kale's place for the last week, so my house felt extra empty. My brother was leaving in a few days, and as much as I still didn't love the idea, it had grown on me now that he would need to have a steady income, health insurance, all the adult things he had never cared about having before Elodie. I hated to admit it, but I was grateful that Kale had pushed him to join the army. Even the silent confession pissed me off. I stared daggers at Kale, and of course he looked over at me at that exact moment. I looked away quickly and excused myself from my brother and Elodie, telling them I had to pee. I found my way to the bathroom and locked the door behind me. The breath of relief that fell out of me felt like a lifetime of anxiety being released from my body. I leaned against the sturdy doorframe, reminding myself of a breathing technique I'd seen on Instagram. I closed my eyes and thought, I breathe in, I breathe out, until my breath steadied and I could feel my feet grounding into the tile floor. The sound of the party outside quieted, and my heart rate slowed. If I hadn't met Kale and he was simply another stranger here, everything would be fine. Still, if I hadn't met him, I wouldn't know anyone here, and I wouldn't have a friendship with Gloria. I also wouldn't know what it felt like to feel so deeply understood by another person. There was a silver lining after all, even though it fucking hurt to see him acting so casually. Seeing him at all would hurt anyway, but him acting like a stranger was too much. What if someone hit on him? What if one of the sexy nurses or the blonde dressed as a hot version of Alice in Wonderland approached him? The thought made me sick. I gathered myself enough to move away from the door and look in the mirror. My own reflection scared the crap out of me, black and red and utterly freaking ridiculous. I laughed, full-on Joker style. I washed my hands and opened the bathroom door, jumping out of my skin at the sight of Kale towering over me. Oh my God! My hand flew toward him, but I stopped before it hit his chest. You scared the shit out of me!
Sorry.
He lazily moved his shoulders up and down. What are you doing here?
Here is in the party or the bathroom?
Of course he would play semantics with me. Bathroom.
I was planning on using it for its intended purposes.
He glanced behind me, nodding to the toilet. How embarrassing. My ego deflated immediately, and my eyes went down to the floor. Oh, sorry, His fingers were warm as he gently held my chin, tilting my face up to look at him. The touch nearly set my body on fire. It was devastating and soothing. Kill me.
I wanted to make sure you're okay. I saw you come in here and you were in there a while. I was worried about you.
I sighed, shaking my head a little to release his grip. I'm fine. Overwhelmed by the party and people. And you?
I like your costume, he said calmly.
I was about to thank him when I caught myself smiling like an idiot. What are we doing? Acting like we're friends or like we don't know each other? I can't do both. He looked around us, confused for half a second before he went back to neutral.
I don't know. I have to leave that up to you. I told you what I want, but I assume you haven't changed your mind?
No, I haven't.